Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Making our way through Monday morning, 9:09, joined by President of St. Charles Parish, Matt Jewell. Hi there, Matt.
I'm doing good, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking at a picture here from the NOLA.com, somebody with a flooded house in Norco. And, man, that just breaks my heart every time I see it. And I can't even imagine having to go through that. Have you ever had that happen to you personally or not?
No, Tommy, I have not had that personally happen to me. But I can tell you, being the parish president, knowing that, you know, you're in charge of infrastructure in the parish, and when you see someone flood, it just makes you sick to your stomach. And unfortunately, in this event, we had some folks in Norco and a couple of folks from the parish who've had some repeat flooding just with the crazy weather that we've had with Hurricane Ida and, you know, flooding in 2020 and now Hurricane Francine. So it makes you sick to your stomach see it. But we're actively working on trying to make improvements there.
That's the response that I have, Matt, because you're tired from the storm, right? You're exhausted from the prep and everything else, and now all of a sudden it's hot as hell. You got no power. And guess what? You're cutting out, what, 2 feet of sheetrock from the floor? If you're lucky, if that's all you have to do?
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at it, you know, I tell people all the time, it doesn't matter if you get 1 inch or one foot. You know, the effects are pretty much the same when you get that water in your home. And, again, you know, we're working really hard to actively fix that. We have projects ready, almost ready to go in Norco. In months, we have projects that are really almost ready to go to bid in Destrehan, as well as projects that are underway currently. And, you know, what I'll tell you is that, you know, looking at the amount of rain we got and when Hurricane Francine stalled over us, and I've reached out to a couple of meteorologists and confirmed what we saw in our weather stations, which is what we got 9 to 10 inches of rain, and the Doppler accumulations are anywhere from 9 to 12 inches of rain. Mm. Norco really got the brunt of it. I mean, the worst of the worst. There was a real small cell within all that really bad rain that was just even worse than what everybody else was getting. And Norco got that, which is just, you know, heartbreaking, again, for a community that's had, you know, this repeat flooding now for a couple of years. But, you know, I'm confident based off of what we're looking at from those previous storms, which this rainfall was very similar to those. The amount of flooding that we had has come down significantly. So that is at least a step in the right direction, but I know that's no consolation to anybody who flooded in this storm.
But in all fairness, Matt, to you and everybody else, you can do whatever you want. But with that kind of rainfall, is there anything you can really do? I mean,
no, the system isn't designed for it. And, you know, people start questioning about culverts and this, that, and the other. Look, when the culverts become overwhelmed, when the pump station is overwhelmed, at a certain point, there's literally just nothing you can do but pray to God that it stops in time before it gets to your house. And I know that's what I was doing, and I know that's what a lot of people were doing across the parish that night when Hurricane Francine was hitting. You know, when we look at projects to do, we're looking at ways to try to keep our main canals as low as possible. And normally what that entails is increasing the size of your sump, as well as increasing the capacity of your pump station. We have a project to do that in Norco. It's a complex project. It requires permits from the Corps of Engineers because we're right up against the spillway levee, and we're going to be discharging into the spillway. Same thing in Munch, similar type of project. But if we can keep our canals as low as possible, that keeps those culverts draining. Once the canal gets too high, everything just stops, and you're just at God's mercy at that point.
And I always say you're a policy guy because you are, but it goes back to what a contractor will tell you, which is, you know, we can do anything you want if you got the money. You could, I guess, design a system that could accommodate 9 to 12 inches of rainfall. It would be extremely expensive and really cost prohibitive. And how often would you use it, right? I mean,
it would be cost prohibitive. It'd be incredibly expensive, and a lot of it would entail widening canals and widening pump stations to where to get to the point, you'd literally have to just buy out people's homes.
That's what I'm saying.
And put canals where their homes are. And, you know, what we're trying to do, we know we can't build to, you know, the 100-year storm, but we've upped our requirement for our storm system from a 10-year to a 25-year storm. And that just means that the system is going to be able to design to handle more rainfall, a higher rainfall rate and more rainfall overall. And not only when we go out and change culverts throughout our, throughout the system, we are upsizing those culverts to meet that 25-year. And if we have new developers coming in, we're requiring retention and detention, and we're requiring them to size everything in their drain system for 25 years. So we did that after the 2020 floods. So we have made progress in that regard. But, building a resilient community doesn't happen overnight, and we're trying to keep our foot on the gas to make that happen.
Yeah, when it comes to construction standards like fortified this or elevated that, has anything changed in the parish? Are you contemplating anything like that, Matt?
You know, the state has the new standard. They're highly recommending fortified roofs. We agree with that standard. Insurance companies have said they will give a discount to residents who build to the fortified standard as far as roofing goes. And we think that's great. We don't think that the discounts are as high enough, really. Mm-hmm. When you look at Alabama, they're getting anywhere from 25 to 50% discount on their property insurance having a fortified roof. I would really like to see that from the insurance companies in Louisiana. We're not seeing that yet, but that's how you really get people to buy into that system is giving that large discount, because if you can go from paying $5,000 to $2,500, okay, now you're able to pay off that, you know, you're able to kind of pay off that roof, which will be 20 to 30% more expensive for a fortified roof a lot quicker.
And when it comes to elevation, is there any way you can elevate yourself out of a 9 to 12 inch rainfall?
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of the houses that did not flood this time were elevated through our FEMA elevation program. Mm-hmm. There are strict requirements through FEMA to qualify. You have to be considered a severe repetitive loss, which means, or a repetitive loss, and that means you flooded a certain amount of times and made claims over a 10-year period or more. And we've successfully lifted, probably over 30 homes, I think, in the last few years. And we are, every year when we know that there's going to be money in that program, we apply for our residents. And a lot of cases, those are up to 100% covered by FEMA. And so we encourage our residents to do that. I tell them all the time, I am working to try to solve the drainage solutions, but elevation is your best defense against flooding.
So how does somebody go about that, Matt, if they are a repetitive flutter, money's available every year, or they apply through the parish, through the state, through the federal government?
Yeah, we get a list of people who apply. Who qualify, mm-hmm. And we will physically and through telephone reach out to those residents and ask them if they're interested in doing the home elevation program. There is a lot of paperwork involved to do it. There are some stipulations about flood insurance afterwards. You have to carry flood insurance in perpetuity, but they will. You know, I got one person whose elevation is going to cost about $300,000. It's a large house, and that property is covered 100% by FEMA for that elevation. And, you know, that's, we always talk about nobody should have to worry or lose sleep at night when it starts raining and worrying about their home flooding. This is one of those programs that takes that away from our residents and really gives them peace of mind. But we know that it's just a tool in the toolkit. We've got to continue doing what we do. By improving conveyance on our railroad tracks, increasing pumping capacity, adding storage, all the things that we can do in our bailiwick.
I don't want to get too caught up in that one project, but after that, for example, after $300,000, 100%, you raise the house and they got to carry flood insurance in perpetuity. Do they get a break on the flood insurance?
Well, that's getting into a whole other subject. We really aren't seeing too much of a break in
it's crazy.
In the FEMA, you know, the FEMA premium, which is crazy because not only they're elevating 2 feet above their BFE, so they set what the base flood elevation is, and then they're elevating 2 feet above that. You would think you'd see a substantial break, but like I say with the entire risk rating 2.0 program, just like the elevation program, they're just trying to recoup their money. So if they elevate your home, they're trying to recoup the money from you as quick as they can. And with risk rating 2.0, they're trying to recoup all the money from Hurricane Katrina. That's really what that's all about.
I thought about you over the weekend when I opened my bill, and it was now over $1,000. Used to be $280, I think. Let's talk about the electricity, Entergy's response, and so forth.
You know, Entergy did very well in this storm, I really feel. Of course, it wasn't as big of a wind event as we thought, at least in St. Charles Parish. And I think when you look at the outage map, especially after the storm, and the outages get denser towards the coast where you did have those strongest winds. But Entergy's response was really good this time. They really have worked hard, especially in St. Charles Parish, to get everybody up. I think we were all back online as of Saturday. That really is an incredible feat, just considering that their own standard is usually about a week past the storm for a category 2, category 1. And, you know, after Hurricane Ida, I demanded that we have an Entergy representative in our EOC who rode out the storm with us so that we could get to work immediately and help them allocate those resources to our critical infrastructure, like our parish government buildings, our schools, our lift stations. And we saw, we got that for this storm, having a representative, and we saw a direct, you know, really a noticeable improvement. We were able to have school on Friday after a storm that made landfall on Wednesday. That was an incredible feat in and of itself.
I know I hate to say policy wonk, but I know you're going to have an after-action review of this and everything. What is it that worked so well, very, very well in St. Charles Parish? What is it that perhaps didn't, other than, you know, obviously, I guess, with the 9 to 12 inches of rain, didn't work so well?
Yeah, I think when you look at from a messaging standpoint, our PIO team, our communications team, they did a tremendous job understanding what messages needed to go out beforehand. We didn't have to react to the public on a lot of that. A lot of the information that was put out, we knew what we had to put out. We knew what we had to put out post storm as well. And that's a direct learning scenario from Hurricane Ida. So I think that worked really well. Our response, our public works teams did a tremendous job getting sandbags out to our recreation teams did a great job preparing their sites, their facilities, as well as helping us deliver sandbags to elderly residents. Our public works team did a tremendous job going through the watersheds, topping off all the fuel at our pump stations and preparing to, you know, flood fight and bolster some of the areas that are prone to storm surge. And I think when you just look at overall, we did a really, really good job. Obviously, if the storm would have moved through like it was supposed to move through, we would not have gotten the rain or the flooding that we did. But we know now that, you know, we need to continue keeping our foot on the gas. And again, like I said, we have a lot of projects that are going to resolve a lot of that flooding. Just takes time, and we're going to get them done.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate your time. Good luck to y'all.
Thank you.
You bet. Matt Jewell, President of St. Charles. Pardon me, Parish. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll talk to Paul LaGrange, host of the Home Improvement Show, owner of LaGrange Consulting, about a whole lot of things when it comes to water, moisture, mitigation, documentation, filing insurance claims, hiring contractors, generator maintenance, etc. We'll talk about it all when we come back. If you got any questions for Paul, 504-260-1870, I'll pass them along. Tommy Tucker.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? an easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
WWL. It's 9:28 now. Seems like Hurricane Francine in one way was a couple hours ago and another way a month ago. Paul LaGrange is here, host of the Home Improvement Show and owner of LaGrange Consulting, to help us kind of get through the aftermath of it. How you doing, Paul?
I am happy to be here. Thank you for having me as a guest.
How's everything at your house?
We had some minor damage. We had some power outages, different things happening, but all in all, it was truly a lot better than I anticipated. I was expecting worse. I was prepared for worse. And I was very, very grateful that it really didn't turn out to the storm, at least where I'm at least.
Amen to
it
that.
Wasn't as bad as I thought.
But, talking to Matt Jewell just now, and he used the word sick to his stomach, and that's really the way I feel when I see somebody who gets water in their house, because I can only imagine what they go through at the time, right? You're exhausted from the storm. It's hot. You got no power. And all of a sudden, you're cutting out sheetrock. For people that are either dealing with that or have had some kind of moisture intrusion into their home, take me from moisture mitigation 101, Paul.
So, Tommy, this is truly a systems approach, a process. And this is so important in today's culture of insurance claims that everything has got to be documented before you can remove and just dispose of. You can't just get a company or even yourself, if you're a go-getter and you have the skills or the tools to do it, just start ripping things out. You truly want to take lots of photographs, not just photographs of far away, but also close-up photographs. If you know that you had 12 inches of water in your house and you had a water line that's marked there, stretch out a measuring tape and take a picture of it far away and close up to see the dimensions.
You're talking about
get a moisture meter,
forensic, like in a court case.
Yes,
almost,
sir.
Right.
Okay. You're building your case with the anticipation that one day you may have to use this evidence, but I'm hoping you don't, because if you're getting in litigation, that is a whole nother conversation that just drags out and really drains the life out of you, and it's not as fruitful as people think, but. Back to the drying portion of it. Obviously, if you had 1 foot of water and you got a 1 foot water line, that water wicked up that wall. It's not just that 1 feet. So as you're removing drywall, there's a good chance you're removing at least a minimum of 2 feet of drywall because of the wood, the insulation, the sheetrock, the millwork, all absorbing like a sponge, all that moisture. And it, capillary, it goes up. So moisture meter, document everything that's wet. The great thing about today's phone technology is everything's geotagged, so they know exactly where you're at when you're taking that photograph. And then at that point, once it's removed, you don't go straight to drying. You're actually going to have to do some sanitation, some remediation, and that could be a spraying a fog or a biocide or antimicrobial, using a helper vacuum to vacuum it. Then you're putting in your dehumidifiers and your air scrubbers and maybe even some supplemental electric heat to help dry it. And then you're there every day measuring the moisture content of the surfaces that you're drying. And the goal here, and this is something I see very often that's overlooked, the goal is to get your home and all the assemblies that have gotten wet to 15% moisture content or less. And that is a stabilized, uniform 15% moisture content or less. They can only be measured with a moisture meter. And when I say stabilized and uniform, the way wood absorbs water and releases it, it starts from the outside, absorbs it, and goes towards the center of the wood. It releases it in the opposite direction, so the center section of that wood stays wet the longest. So as the air in that bedroom that you're drying becomes drier because of use of dehumidifiers, it releases the water from the outside surface or the skin or the face of that wood 2x4. And then as that outside skin gets drier, then the inside releases a little bit to the drier outside face. And it truly is a process. And the part, and this is go back to what I'm saying, I see this done wrong all the time, is a moisture, a remediation company will come and measure the moisture because they're being directed this way by the insurance industry to measure the surface moisture content of the wood. If it's 15%, take your equipment out, you're done. In reality, what happens, you still have moisture inside the center or beneath the surface of that wood. It may take a week. Every house is different. Every material is different. It may take 5, 6, 7, 10 days of drying actively with mechanical equipment to dry. The insurance industry says you can do it in 3 days. And that's smoke and mirrors. That's Hollywood. That doesn't work.
Paul, this seems pretty complicated stuff for the average person with average do-it-yourself skills to take on.
It really does. This is best. I mean, you can do some of the documentation and some of the removal, the demolition, and getting the wet flooring and sheetrock and millwork and doors out of your house. You can certainly do that. Anybody with a strong back can make that happen and some gumption. But the rest of it truly needs to be held up to professionals and let them do it. And here's the other part of this, too, is that your home got damaged. And if you have insurance, it's responsibility of the underwriter to get you back to where you were before the event. And part of that in today's insurance claim world is documentation. And the professionals really know how to do this between the use of infrared cameras, geotagging, moisture mapping, moisture meters, daily readings of the machines of how long they ran and how much moisture they removed. All this goes into building your case. Back to, like you said, it's a perfect analogy. You're developing your evidence, and I'm really hoping you don't need to use it. I'm hoping you could present it to the adjuster. They present it to the desk adjuster. So the field adjuster is not the decision maker. It's the desk adjuster makes these choices and decisions, what gets covered, what doesn't. You're spoon-feeding that person that information in the office who has not been to your home to say, oh, wow, this house really was flooded, and I see all the evidence. Okay, we're going to meet this claim go through.
We were talking to Tim Temple earlier, and he was talking about trying to work it out with the insurance company yourself without getting a third party involved. Again, presuming everybody's playing fair, I understand that and how you wouldn't want to do that. But, boy, when you talk about documentation, if you don't do it right from the get-go, you're up against it from the beginning, right?
You really are. You're starting behind, way behind the starting line, so to speak, if you're in a race. Because in today's arena of insurance claims, it truly is you need to be prepared for a battle. And I can tell you through my experience, even most recently with Ida, I had a number of claims, a number of different properties. Some went really well and some didn't. And I presented my information, my evidence the same way all the way across the board for every one of the claims. It really depended. And a lot of these were the same insurance company, but it were different desk adjusters. Mm-hmm. It's the desk adjuster who's the decision maker. And if you're fortunate and blessed to get one that sees it and takes the time to read it and understand it and moves it through, you could have a great experience. If one that does not, that's when sometimes you have to hire third party. You know, get an expert in forensic investigation like myself, or get a public adjuster, or get an attorney or a team of people to go after them.
Paul, when it comes to materials that you're going to replace the old materials with, are there things you can do to kind of mitigate trouble in the future?
They are. And in fact, LSU La House, that is Louisiana House on LSU's campus, right across from the baseball field in Baton Rouge. After Hurricane Katrina, started putting systems in place that I helped develop along with a whole team. It was a big, huge team effort. Please don't take it. It's just me, because it wasn't. And we have demonstrations at that house where you can physically go touch and see the products we recommend and the order of events of what should be installed first and second and third. They also have a great website, too. So if you can't make it to Baton Rouge, I certainly understand. If you have internet, go to their website, and a lot of this information is online about sustainable building related to what they call flood-hardy homes. We actually even did a couple of demonstration houses in New Orleans for flood-hardy homes shortly after Hurricane Katrina, displaying, showing all these systems that work so that they can get wet, but then you can clean them, dry them, and put things back together faster and cheaper without rebuilding your whole house.
I think if it happened to me, I'd just replace it with stainless steel and floor drains. I swear to goodness, I'm just pressure. I'm not kidding,
yes,
Paul. It would be hard to overcome. Thank you. I appreciate your time and your efforts, Paul. Really,
anytime.
Your information. Paul LaGrange, host of the Home Improvement Show, owner of LaGrange Consulting. We'll take a break, come back, talk about what happened with former President Trump over the weekend with Paul Violas, National Law Enforcement Security Analyst, CEO of the Violas Group. 938 Traffic Now, WWL. 9:45, now quarter till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Paul Violas, National Law Enforcement Security Analyst, CEO of Violas Group International. I thought that I was looking at something dated when I flipped on a TV yesterday and saw that there had been another assassination. First of all, Paul Violas, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Always great to join you.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time with us. So I see people parsing words on the internet. I don't know if it matters or not about assassination attempt or plot. How are we classifying this?
Well, conspiracy you could throw into the mixes if you want, Tommy. I will tell you that, yeah, I mean, when we look at the totality of this incident as compared to what happened a couple months back in Pennsylvania, this one concerns me far more, and
tell
I will tell
why.
You why.
Yeah.
I will, because, and it's important for your audience to understand that, because the issue we have here is a blatant and an overt breach of communication security inside the Trump camp. Somebody who has access to his calendar communicated information that got to this shooter. And that, in and of itself, makes this far more dangerous than the last one. So whether it was someone at the golf course, whether it was someone that has his calendar as part of his executive staff, whether it was someone in his security detail, whoever it was, someone absolutely gave information on this personal event, not public event, that got in the hands of the shooter. That, Tommy, is the thing that should be keeping us up at night as Americans. That's the biggest issue we have right here.
So when you factor that in, though, with what happened in Pennsylvania, with how somebody was able to get that close, if I'm former President Trump, boy, I got to tell you, like you, I'm kind of wondering what's going on here. Yes?
Well, I'm getting my own detail. I mean, that's all there is to it. I've been asked a number of questions about this, as you can imagine, since yesterday.
Yeah.
And one of the things people ask me, so, you know, what would you tell them? I tell them, get your own detail. And it's not that, see, here's the frustrating part, Tommy. It's not that the U.S. Secret Service isn't the best trained and most highly qualified group of professionals to protect a dignitary, because they are. There's no question about that, which begs the question. Then who's dropping the ball relative to the blatant lack of security package that he's been getting? The fact that, once again, the exterior perimeter is compromised. We keep hearing that it's a money issue and there's not enough staff involved. Then we hear, well, he's getting what any former president gets. What's the story?
So let's look at the lay of the land here, and let's go back to somebody leaking the information. I've seen it said that, well, when, you know, I don't know what the protocol is, but I would presume when former President Trump goes to play golf, there is some kind of security, what do you call it, some kind of motorcade or something?
Security detail. There's a security detail. Yes, Tommy, that's correct.
Flashing lights and black Tahoes and all that kind of stuff, or Suburbans and all
that? Yes, sir. That is correct, yes.
So I guess when you say leak, I'm just wondering if we know that this couldn't have been like a happenstance thing where this guy, for whatever reason, I'm just postulating here. I have no idea.
Correct.
A nut job that sees, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, there he is. Or he plays golf every Sunday, or routine, or whatever. I have no earthly idea what happens. I'm just spitting stuff out here. And he says, well, you know what? Maybe he'll be playing golf today, sees a motorcade, and then sets up, or what? Tell me why that cannot be the case.
Well, it can't be the case because he went to a part in the fence line, Tommy, that had access from a main road where he was able to go through into the tree line and get a direct shot at the president, which would mean that he would know when he was going to be there and precisely what time he was starting, so he could set up in that position that would get him in a location with a direct shot for the president. So the timing of that had to be crucial. He had to know when he was going to start. I mean, there's no question about that. The issue here also is the lack of perimeter. Now, think about this, right? They're saying, and this is what I've heard, and I'm hoping and praying that it's the media that's dropping the ball on this with the story that we're hearing, that Secret Service is saying that they saw the butt of a gun approximately 300 yards away and determined it was an AK-47 and opened fire. Tommy, if that's the case, I want to eat what that guy's eating because I want to see 300 yards through a tree line and be able to see a small butt of a gun and know it's an AK-47. So we know that that's false. And then you start firing, though. Now, think about it. He starts firing into a tree line where...
He being the Secret Service agent?
Correct. Into the tree line where a public street where people, families are driving back and forth. So you unload on somebody you allegedly can't see but just see the butt of a gun into a tree line where you could be killing innocent people. So there are so many problems with this strategically and tactically, administratively, from a planning perspective. There's so many problems with this particular one, Tommy, that I'm telling you it makes it far worse than the first one when he actually got hit.
So do we know if this guy got off any shots at the president or not?
Well, what we're being told is that he did not. But we're also being told that we don't know how many shots were fired. Now, for those of us that have been in deadly physical force situations, I can assure you, you know how many shots were fired. Mm-hmm. So there's a problem right there. I'm going to hold that in abeyance and wait until we actually see what the forensic report is. But the big compelling issue that we should all be concerned with is, look, we got families driving back and forth, moms bringing their kids to school. Mm-hmm. And you're firing into a tree line? Look, I tell you what, you are sitting down. You are not coming back to work. That's number one. Do not praise that. That was reckless. Unless you actually saw a human being who was posted up or in the prone position, and you've identified that it's a long gun and he's about to take a shot at the president. Different story. That's not what we're being told. So, again, gross disparity as far as what the truth is and what we're being told.
So 500 yards.
Therein lies the difference.
Five football fields. That's a long way away.
Yeah, Tommy, listen, man. When I first qualified with a long gun, and granted I'm dating myself, but it was an M16, and you qualified, the starting distance was 300 yards. Mm-hmm. So he's 300 yards away with a scope that is not that's not a difficult shot. But if you're the Secret Service agent who doesn't have a long gun, who has a handgun...
Wait.
And you're saying...
The Secret Service agent responded with a handgun?
This is what we're being told. He
From
responded with a handgun.
From 400 to 500 yards?
But this is... Tommy, you're with me now. This is my problem. You know?
Oh.
I don't have to be a...
I thought you were talking about a sniper or something here responding from that. He was shooting a handgun from 500 yards away?
Said it was his advanced, what they had said is it was his advanced detail that was ahead of him, like one hole ahead, one golf hole ahead of him. So you're firing that with a handgun at that distance, and you're recognizing with the naked eye 300 yards away that it's an AK-47 with the butt of a gun through a tree line? I mean, come on, seriously. That disturbs me, I have to say. It disturbs me. And remember, Tommy, we still have the same threat that we had back in July of this year, where Iran's elite force, the Quds, still have a price tag on the president's head.
So do you think... go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, Tommy, my neck hurts from my head shaking so much. I don't know what to say.
I guess I'm wondering, could this have been inadvertent, where, you know, loose lips, where, you know, the president's coming in and don't tell anybody, and then it gets out, one person overhears something? Do you think there's something a lot more nefarious at play here?
I know it's much more nefarious. It has to be, because you have to understand the way communication security works. I mean, I spent my life in the government. Look, I've been with my wife since we're 15 years old, 47 years. I love the woman. There's nothing I don't tell her. But she knows nothing about what I've done for a living because she doesn't have a need to know. And she knows that. I'm not going to say anything. No one says anything. When you're given that information, Tommy, you take that to the grave. You don't repeat that. Now, if it's somebody insignificant like myself and someone says, oh, gee, Viola's going to be there, not like anybody would care anyway, that's one thing. You're talking about the former president, somebody that was a target of an assassination 2 months ago. There's no reasonable excuse for anyone being bequeathed with that information that doesn't have a need to know, much us sharing it.
I guess I'm wondering about somebody at the golf club, because somebody at the golf club would have to
Could
know,
be.
Right?
Could be, but a limited amount of people at the golf club. Limited. You know? I mean, who really needs to know at the golf club that the guy who owns the golf club is coming today to play? No one needs to know.
So where does
Maybe
this go?
Maybe one or two people?
Where does the investigation go from here?
Excellent question, as always. So right now, you've got several veins of the investigation. One side of it is going to be internal. So you're going to start interviewing every single person that had access or knowledge to that calendar. And that's you're going to look at that. The second part, you're going to look at the guy. You're going to get search warrants, which they already have through Palm Beach County, and through the FBI. You'll get search warrants for his vehicle or vehicles, homes, computer, and phone. You're going to find out who he spoke to, websites that he went to. You're going to start looking for how did he know, how did he plan this, and what was his agenda, who's he associated with, who's he affiliated with. And that's where this investigation is going to go right now, far more that we don't know, that we need to know, that we don't have right now. But in the coming days, Tommy, in the coming days, this is the information we need to press for, because this is not a matter of incompetence. This is a deliberate and different decision about the protection of a former president, and that's it right there.
Wow. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your time and your insight. Paul Violas, National Law Enforcement Security Analyst, CEO of Violas Group International. 9:55, we'll take a break, find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL. 9:45, now quarter till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Paul Violas, National Law Enforcement Security Analyst, CEO of Violas Group International. I thought that I was looking at something dated when I flipped on a TV yesterday and saw that there had been another assassination. First of all, Paul Violas, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Always great to join you.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time with us. So I see people parsing words on the Internet. I don't know if it matters or not about assassination attempt or plot. How are we classifying this?
Well, conspiracy you could throw into the mixes if you want, Tommy. I will tell you that, when we look at the totality of this incident as compared to what happened a couple months back in Pennsylvania, this one concerns me far more, and I will tell you why.
Yeah.
I will, because, and it's important for your audience to understand that, because the issue we have here is a blatant and an overt breach of communication security inside the Trump camp. Somebody who has access to his calendar communicated information that got to this shooter. And that, in and of itself, makes this far more dangerous than the last one. So whether it was someone at the golf course, whether it was someone that has his calendar as part of his executive staff, whether it was someone in his security detail, whoever it was, someone absolutely gave information on this personal event, not public event, that got in the hands of the shooter. That, Tommy, is the thing that should be keeping us up at night as Americans. That's the biggest issue we have right here.
So when you factor that in, though, with what happened in Pennsylvania, with how somebody was able to get that close, if I'm former President Trump, boy, I got to tell you, like you, I'm kind of wondering what's going on here. Yes?
Well, I'm getting my own detail. I mean, that's all there is to it. I've been asked a number of questions about this, as you can imagine, since yesterday.
Yeah.
And one of the things people ask me, so, you know, what would you tell them? I tell them, get your own detail. And it's not that, see, here's the frustrating part, Tommy. It's not that the U.S. Secret Service isn't the best trained and most highly qualified group of professionals to protect a dignitary, because they are. There's no question about that, which begs the question. Then who's dropping the ball relative to the blatant lack of security package that he's been getting? The fact that, once again, the exterior perimeter is compromised. We keep hearing that it's a money issue and there's not enough staff involved. Then we hear, well, he's getting what any former president gets. What's the story?
So let's look at the lay of the land here, and let's go back to somebody leaking the information. I've seen it said that, well, when, you know, the I don't know what the protocol is, but I would presume when former President Trump goes to play golf, there is some kind of security, what do you call it, some kind of motorcade or something?
Security detail. There's a security detail. Yes, Tommy, that's correct.
Flashing lights and black Tahoes and all that kind of stuff, or Suburbans and all?
Yes, sir. That is correct, yes.
So I guess when you say leak, I'm just wondering if we know that this couldn't have been like a happenstance thing where this guy, for whatever reason, I'm just postulating here. I have no idea.
Correct.
A nut job that sees, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, there he is, or he plays golf every Sunday, or routine, or whatever. I have no earthly idea what happens. I'm just spitting stuff out here, and he says, well, you know what, maybe he'll be playing golf today, sees a motorcade, and then sets up, or what? Tell me why that could not be the case.
Well, it can't be the case because he went to a part in the fence line, Tommy, that had access from a main road where he was able to go through into the tree line and get a direct shot at the president, which would mean that he would know when he was going to be there and precisely what time he was starting, so he could set up in that position that would get him in a location with a direct shot for the president. So the timing of that had to be crucial. He had to know when he was going to start. I mean, there's no question about that. The issue here also is the lack of perimeter. Now, think about this, right? They're saying, and this is what I've heard, and I'm hoping and praying that it's the media that's dropping the ball on this with the story that we're hearing, that Secret Service is saying that they saw the butt of a gun approximately 300 yards away and determined it was an AK-47 and opened fire. Tommy, if that's the case, I want to eat what that guy's eating, because I want to see 300 yards through a tree line and be able to see a small butt of a gun and know it's an AK-47. So we know that that's false. And then you start firing, though. Now, think about it. He starts firing into a tree line where...
He being the Secret Service agent?
Correct. Into the tree line where a public street where people, families are driving back and forth. So you unload on somebody you allegedly can't see but just see the butt of a gun into a tree line where you could be killing innocent people. So there are so many problems with this strategically and tactically, administratively, from a planning perspective. There's so many problems with this particular one, Tommy, that I'm telling you it makes it far worse than the first one when he actually got hit.
So do we know if this guy got off any shots at the president or not?
Well, what we're being told is that he did not. But we're also being told that we don't know how many shots were fired. Now, for those of us that have been in deadly physical force situations, I can assure you, you know how many shots were fired. Mm-hmm. So there's a problem right there. I'm going to hold that in abeyance and wait until we actually see what the forensic report is. But the big compelling issue that we should all be concerned with is, look, we got families driving back and forth, moms bringing their kids to school, and you're firing into a tree line? Look, I tell you what, you are sitting down, you are not coming back to work. That's number one. Do not praise that. That was reckless. Unless you actually saw a human being who was posted up or in the prone position, and you've identified that it's a long gun and he's about to take a shot at the president. Different story. That's not what we're being told. So, again, gross disparity as far as what the truth is and what we're being told.
So 500 yards.
Therein lies the difference.
Five football fields. That's a long way away.
Yeah, Tommy, listen, man. When I first qualified with a long gun, and granted I'm dating myself, but it was an M16, and you qualified, the starting distance was 300 yards. Mm-hmm. So he's 300 yards away with a scope that is not a difficult shot. But if you're the Secret Service agent who doesn't have a long gun, who has a handgun...
Wait.
And you're saying...
The Secret Service agent responded with a handgun?
This is what we're being told. He
From
responded with a handgun.
From 400 to 500 yards?
Right. This is... Tommy, you're with me now. This is my problem. You know?
Oh.
I don't have to be a...
I thought you were talking about a sniper or something here responding from that. He was shooting a handgun from 500 yards away?
Said it was his advanced, what they had said is it was his advanced detail that was ahead of him, like one hole ahead, one golf hole ahead of him. So you're firing that with a handgun at that distance, and you're recognizing with the naked eye 300 yards away that it's an AK-47 with the butt of a gun through a tree line? I mean, come on, seriously. That disturbs me, I have to say. It disturbs me. And remember, Tommy, we still have the same threat that we had back in July of this year, where Iran's elite force, the Quds, still have a price tag on the president's head.
So do you think... go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, I just... Tommy, my neck hurts from my head shaking so much. I don't know what to say.
I guess I'm wondering, could this have been inadvertent, where, you know, loose lips, where, you know, the president's coming in and don't tell anybody, and then it gets out, one person overhears something? Do you think there's something a lot more nefarious at play here?
I know it's much more nefarious. It has to be, because you have to understand the way communication security works. I mean, I spent my life in the government. Look, I've been with my wife since we're 15 years old, 47 years. I love the woman. There's nothing I don't tell her. But she knows nothing about what I've done for a living, because she doesn't have a need to know. And she knows that. I'm not going to say anything. No one says anything. When you're given that information, Tommy, you take that to the grave. You don't repeat that. Now, if it's somebody insignificant like myself and someone says, oh, gee, Viola's going to be there, not like anybody would care anyway, that's one thing. If you're talking about the former president, somebody that was the target of an assassination 2 months ago, there's no reasonable excuse for anyone being bequeathed with that information that doesn't have a need to know much, us sharing it.
I guess I'm wondering about somebody at the golf club, because somebody at the golf club would have to
Could
know,
be.
Right?
Could be, but a limited amount of people at the golf club. Limited, you know? I mean, who really needs to know at the golf club that the guy who owns the golf club is coming today to play? No one needs to know.
So where does
Maybe
this go?
Maybe one or two people?
Where does the investigation go from here?
Excellent question, as always. So right now, you've got several veins of the investigation. One side of it is going to be internal. So you're going to start interviewing every single person that had access or knowledge to that calendar. And that's you're going to look at that. The second part, you're going to look at the guy. You're going to get search warrants, which they already have through Palm Beach County, and through the FBI. You'll get search warrants for his vehicle or vehicles, homes, computer, and phone. You're going to find out who he spoke to, websites that he went to. You're going to start looking for how did he know, how did he plan this, and what was his agenda? Who's he associated with? Who's he affiliated with? And that's where this investigation is going to go right now. Far more that we don't know, that we need to know, that we don't have right now. But in the coming days, Tommy, in the coming days, this is the information we need to press for, because this is not a matter of incompetence. This is a deliberate and different decision about the protection of a former president, and that's it right there.
Wow. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your time and your insight. Paul Violas, National Law Enforcement Security Analyst, CEO of Violas Group International, 9:55. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.